Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Hey, I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And we're here today to talk about families and how they relate to mental health.
Also,
we have a third voice with us that is not Dedalian today. This is Brendan.
Hi there, everybody.
So, okay.
Are you the positive person in your family?
I don't know. I don't know.
Are you the cheerleader?
I wouldn't say, this is, well, we're jumping in.
Yeah, we are. I'm going to grill you.
Okay.
Both of you. I'm feeling spicy. I'm feeling interrogative.
You got some spice
interrogative.
Well, I think.
Is that a word?
Your brother a couple of years ago did a play called The Incredibly Human Thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything more human than being in a family. We are all products of a family one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Families come in all shapes and sizes, all different dimensions.
Descriptions. Biological or genetic versus not.
And cultural and socioeconomic. I mean, there's all different dimensions of families, all different things that formulate what a family is. And you and I are, you know, we're from, what would you say? Middle class, upper middle class families?
Yeah, middle class. My parents
are Caucasian.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? How about you, Brendan? Yep.
Yeah, solid middle class.
Solid middle class, American, USA families,
Protestant
kind of thing.
Both my parents are from Protestant traditions. You're Catholic.
Catholic family.
A bit different.
Catholic Central, Holy Cross, all that stuff. So all that had an influence on it. So one of my thoughts was, when I think about families, there was a guy named Bill Moyers, who was a great journalist. A number of years ago, he did a number of different specials. And one of the specials he did was on a book group that was studying the book of Genesis, Old Testament Bible stuff. And he made this point. So he was recording these conversations and then editing them down. But it wasn't like only priests were there. It was priests and clerics and rabbis and authors and atheists and artists and all kinds of different people were participating in this. And they were just giving their take on these different pieces of literature. But one person, this always stood out to me, one person said, you know, these are all stories about families. And it's about when things go wrong in families, like who slept with the wrong person, who gets the blessing, who didn't get the blessing.
Who murdered their brother.
Who murders their brother.
That's what immediately comes to mind.
Exactly. Exactly. And very few times is there any clear resolution. It's kind of like, well, this is what it is. This is the way life is. And what are you going to do about it?
It's a very primitive thing, I think.
A very primitive.
Yeah, family system. I mean, you know, like I'm thinking of caveman or, you know, primitive human clusters. Our social groups are going to be family groups. And primates, you know, if you look back at, you know, the biological mammals and primates are very family oriented.
So when they started writing stuff down, I mean, one of the earliest stories is don't kill your brother. So that must have been going on a lot.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, you know.
Let's not do that.
People need somebody to blame.
Also, let's not sacrifice our children. Let's not put them on a burning pile of wood.
That was another.
That was another one.
That's beyond.
Yeah,
my
that
Bible
was. That wasn't Job. That was Abraham. Abraham was had heard voices of God saying, "I want you to kill one of your sons."
Yeah.
And then when he went
as
out
like
to
a
do
sacrifice.
It, to show his fealty,
right,
or his allegiance.
All right, we got to move on from the Bible. It's just dark. Let's talk about Freud.
The Bible is pretty dark.
Then we can go to Freud, who is equally dark. I'm teasing. We don't have to. But Freud, you know, I think I would say most psych individuals have a lot to say about early relationships in somebody's life and how that impacts them.
They've studied it from all kinds of angles, you know, stages of development, attachment, all kinds of things. The interesting thing about Freud, I think, when he was first doing his studies he was working with hysterical, quote unquote, hysterical women. And at the time, women that were having a lot of feelings and would be crying or upset or something, they would call them hysteric, and they would take out their wombs. They would give them hysterectomies to relieve them of their hysteria. And he thought that there was a different cure. It was very messed up. So he would do these things. He would have them hold a watch, and he'd have them go back, you know, the watch would go back and forth in front of their eyes. And he would just say, free associate, say anything that comes into your mind. And after a while, after he gained their trust, a lot of them started to talk about incest experiences or being molested in some way. And at first, Freud thought, oh my gosh, this is like a, there's an epidemic of this in our culture. And then he thought, that's got to be wrong. That can't possibly be. And so he said, this is a fantasy. This is the Oedipal fantasy that people want to, they, you know, boys want to sleep with their mothers, daughters want to sleep with their fathers. He thought that's probably what it was. And he was wrong. And so he's gotten a lot of flack for that over the years, and rightfully so. He was right about other things, but not that. Anyway, let's talk about our families now.
Moving on. When families go wrong is often a topic in psych. But what about good stuff? I mean, you know, well, are you okay with talking about your family? Where are you in your family in terms of like siblings and things?
Well, I think all families are a blend. And even, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes when kids are removed from abusive families, one of their desires is to get back into the family, you know? So there's a connection that families have, that there's a lot of things that you draw from a family.
There's an origin story.
Yeah.
I'm working with folks who are adopted, especially teens who are adopted. Not always, but there's frequently, you know, just a real, whether or not it's conscious, a desire to understand why they were put up for adoption or why they were not kept by their biological family.
I think that's true more often than not. People that I've worked with that are adopted often have that, a real strong wish to understand their own origins, and sometimes have a desire to really search it out, and other times not so much. But
and also, I think I'm thinking of people in genealogy. I mean, I love genealogy, and that's a hobby, pastime, and I love it from a family background, but also kind of as a lens to look at history. But now I studied in England for a year, and I was at the University College of London, and I took a social theory course. But somehow the concept of Americans wanting to come to the UK or to Ireland to connect with their past was it was not necessarily a joke, but it was definitely a trope, like the American that is like seeking.
I did it.
You know, seeking. Yeah, I mean, my dad did it. And it's such a major thing. Like, what, you know, even for us wanting to know as Americans, I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, so wanting to connect to even like a longer history.
Yeah. And speaking of history and the way psychology has viewed families, you know, there was the idea, I think it was very prevalent in the 70s and 80s, maybe even into the 90s, of the dysfunctional family, you know, and all families exist on a continuum. There's really positive attributes to them. And then there's also things that
I say, show me the functional family. I don't know that I've ever met a functional family. Well, I think every family would probably, you know, at least somebody in the family would say this is dysfunctional.
Do you want to say more about that?
Well, you know, you don't know what you're getting into, you know, like when you're growing up as a child, I mean, you know, you
didn't pick this family.
You did not pick the family. You did not pick the family, and you don't have a lot of choice as a, you know, as a child. And well, this may be a point of interesting discussion, but you really don't, you know, at least when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot of choice in what was happening or how you were raised or what was going to, you know, I mean, it was kind of like you went along with what people told you to do. Even though I'm sure you and plenty of, you know, I mean, you don't necessarily agree with it or don't have a great time, or, you know, there's positives, but there's also negatives. There's just not a lot of, at least for me, it didn't feel like there was a lot of choice. You just endured until you were done and you went off to college in my case. But now I think, you know, children are much more of a, you know, they're much more of a cooperative sort of relationship. Like they, I mean, I think some people would say kids call the shots, you know, in a lot of families these days. And, you know, the parents are more reactive to what the children want. Whereas mm-hmm. I would say in my family growing up, it was much more like my parents were doing whatever they were doing and we were along for the ride.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that's an interesting word, endure. And there's a certain amount of endurance that goes on in childhood where you're just kind of like, okay, this is what we're doing. And it was just the way it was. And it isn't until you get later in your years into your adulthood that you look back at it and say, no, wait a minute, what was that about? What's going on here? But, you know, generally, you know, when I think about my family now, my dad was very, very kind. My mother could be very nurturing, but way too much alcohol, a lot of depression. My dad was a World War II veteran. He'd served in Europe. I think he had PTSD because as a kid, you know, I was very interested in finding out what happened to him as a soldier. Mm. And anytime I'd ask him, he would dissociate. You know, I call it leaving the room without leaving the room. You know, he would just, it was like, oh. And I learned after a while not to talk to him about that, not to ask him about that, because it was evidently some painful memories. How about you, Brendan?
For sure. Just thinking of my family dynamic and how we all fit in, you don't necessarily get to choose your family. You can pick your friends, you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose. It's like that.
My parents used to say that.
Right? You can't pick your...
But you can't pick your family.
Right, exactly.
Right.
But it's like, yeah. No, it's they're the people you come into this world with, and that out of all of the people on this planet, they are your people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They're both, you know, I think on the one hand, they're a testing ground for conflict. You know, those are the people that are your first rivals, are your siblings. And your interaction with your parents is your first experience with any kind of authority figures, and how do you negotiate that? And is that a smooth ride? I always had problems with authority figures, you know.
And me too.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I'm self-employed.
Me too.
but with siblings, you know, they're your rivals and also your best friends growing up, and it's a combined thing. And that either gets resolved or resolved to an extent or not at all resolved. And that's different. How many times do you hear about people saying, well, I have this brother, but I never talked to him. Or I have this family member where we haven't spoken in years. And that always hits me as sad. And sometimes it's necessary if someone is like really way out there or really abusive or something. Mm-hmm. But that whole, how did people... If you can't kill your brother, what else do you do with him? I mean, because that's another old world thing of shunning somebody. Uh-huh. You are no longer in the family, which I think prior to maybe a couple hundred years ago, maybe was probably a death sentence. You know, you're outside the family. You're done. You're done for, you know, kind of.
Like you have to fend for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You become a wanderer or a, you know, just a loose person in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it's well, the family experience is so varied now, and you know, maybe historically and socially, you know, families were so important for survival. You know, I mean, I've been looking at a lot of like kind of early 1800s America. So pioneer families, I mean, you really were the kids were completely dependent on the parents, and and the parents' job is really to kind of raise them until they could work and they could be part of the family system and contribute. And you know, if you lived rurally, then you just became part of that. It wasn't you wanted to leave. That was kind of a different, you know, that was unique. That was rare.
My grandfather was born in the 1860s, believe it or not. My great grandfather, so I never met him. Mm-hmm. My great grandfather, he had 14 children. Hey. And he was born in the 1830s, I think that's right. Anyway, back in those days, you had 14 kids because seven of them wouldn't reach age five, you know, and the rest of them were probably going to either work on the farm or they were going to be apprentices if you had if you were making shoes, for instance, that kind of thing. So there wasn't this idea of you're going to grow up and you're going to leave home and make your way. There often was a really more pronounced kind of family unit, I think, in a lot of ways. And that's not true. I mean, I think that families who had an immigrant experience, and I think almost everybody in the United States came from a family which had an immigrant experience. And you know,
except for
like,
the native.
Yeah, right, yeah. right. But I'm three generations away from that experience on the Irish side. Some people are only one, you know, or sometimes their first generation having that experience. So anyway.
That's so interesting. You know, now my grandmother, so my grandmother on my mom's side, her mom died when she was, her mom immigrated from England. So my great grandmother was English from Liverpool. And but she died in the Depression.
Are you related to any of the Beatles, do you think?
I don't think so. Not that I know of.
Have you checked?
No, not really, actually. So her last name was Pollack, P-O-L-L-A-C-K. So I don't know if there's a Pollack anywhere in the Beatles.
Pollack McCartney.
Pollack McCartney. But she, my so she had one brother who she was incredibly close to, and because her father was away. They grew up in the Depression. Her father was away. He was a civil engineer for the military. And so she basically was, you know, raised her brother after her mom died when she was in her early teens, I think. Mm-hmm. And so she describes her childhood and family. It was just very lonely. I mean, it was just a lot of loneliness. It was in northern Michigan. She was very, I wouldn't say she was like overly committed to family, but if there was a need in the family, she was a nurse. She was the one to go and help people.
Is this your father's side?
This is my mom's
side.
Oh,
your mom's side. Yeah. Okay. How about your dad?
What? On my dad's side, my both my grandparents were flawed, well, you know, flawed individuals. Flawed. So my grandmother grew up very poor, the other one, and she was from Missouri. And her father died when she was very young. And so she and her three sisters moved to Detroit to work in factories when they were, it was right around the war. So right before the war started, 1940 or 41. Mm-hmm. She met my grandfather. They married right before he went to war. And then he came back from the war, PTSD and severe alcohol problem, and never really could, you know, kind of get it together.
Did you know those people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Grandma and Grandpa. Polly Fraser. She was a Scottish woman. And James Bowen. That was my dad's dad. So, yeah. So they, and my dad had a very, I don't think it was a poor relationship with his father, but it was not a fatherly relationship. Like, he was very absent. He just wasn't available.
Yeah.
And so my dad was pretty much on his own in terms of, like, kind of fending for himself very early.
That's interesting. My dad's dad died when my dad was 13. And so the first time I ever got into therapy, and I was complaining that my dad wasn't very present to me, and the therapist pointed out, well, he didn't have a dad himself. He didn't know what to do, you know. And it's like, oh, okay, I don't have to own that then, you know. That's not about me.
Well, in family work, you know, and that was a lot of, that was a big component for me to understand and to realize. And you don't get that when you're a when you're young, a teenager. You're, I think, fundamentally very self-absorbed as a as an adolescent. Maybe it was just me. I don't know.
Did that but stop at some point?
But my dad and I had enormous amount of conflict, and you know, and he just like, he just wasn't, he was not a bad, he just didn't know what he was doing. I mean, he just really didn't know what he was doing. And he equated, I think, being like a man, like I'm using air quotes, like masculine man, with being a father. And that wasn't.
And a hunter.
Yeah, he was a hunter, rode motorcycles. I mean, you know, he was. And so somehow, you know, that blend of fatherhood and masculinity, that was really important to him. He had tattoos as well, so he had a lot of tattoos about his role as a father, his role as a man. He was a great provider, you know. He did a lot of, I mean, he, I was, you know, he did a lot of things really well. But in terms of, like, being able to, I think, relate on a structured kind of, I'm going to sit with you and we're going to talk, and, you know, consistently over time, like, you know, that was not him. But he was busy. He was doing a lot of stuff. So I see parents now, like my brothers, I have three brothers, And, you know, they're much more intentional, I think, with their parenting. They, they are aware of like early development stuff with their kids, and they want to spend the time. They want to teach attributes, patience, kindness. You know, so it's much more, I think it's just much more intentional. I think my parents were just kind of making it up as they went along.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was of that generation too, that we were considered free range, you know, just you know, feed us breakfast, send them out, come home when the streetlights come on.
Yeah.
So there was
not. Well, and I think that there's a role for parenting for all sorts of people who aren't parents. You know, I had teachers, like friends, and their parents are, you know, really helpful. And, you know, you meet people along the way.
Yeah.
That are maybe they're mentors, but they provide, they provide that, you know,
paternal mentorship or something. Right. And the other thing for me, being a parent, even though I only have one child, she also has a mother, so it's not just me. Yeah. however, that I got a lot of empathy for my parents after that, of like recognizing, like, oh my God, it's really hard to be a parent. You know, it's a really difficult thing and scary thing. You know, I remember after she was born and it was time to go home from the hospital, and I thought, aren't you going to send a nurse with us? How are we supposed to keep this child alive?
Yeah, it must be right. Yeah.
Anyway, so when a client presents, I mean, do you do a lot of, I don't know, exploration of their family dynamics?
I want to understand, you know, I'm not doing therapy, but I do want to understand, you know, when I'm working in evaluation and diagnosis, how, well, A, there's family history of disease process. So, you know, depression, bipolar disorder, really, you know, psychosis, is there a family history of such? As well as, what was your early, you know, kind of childhood like? What, you know, attachment-wise? Because that can be incredibly informative of if somebody has a lot of, I want to say chaos, difficulty in relationships, and, you know, anxiety, stress, is, you know, is this from a primary kind of biochemical issue, or is this more related to the way that your relationships are formed and maintained, your expectations and relationships, your model of things? And I think that early childhood and really throughout can be very instructive. Mm-hmm. And that's how it helps me, I guess, maybe with case formulation, you know, kind of think about where the person is coming from.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much the same for me. People, when I get to know people initially in therapy, I want to know, you know, who are you today? What do you like to do? What are your interests? And now what's the problem? And then usually when we start talking about their family, you can see it starts to make sense the more they talk about their families. Mm-hmm. So,
And also, you know, for me, it's, you know, what is your understanding, or what are your thoughts about medication? And, you know, a lot of times the family, their early experiences or what their parents thought, especially if they're young, are very influential in that. Mm-hmm. I can think of one case where, you know, this person was pretty sick and had psychotic issues, and their parent was very against them taking medication. And so it was constant. And this person was in their 20s at least, maybe even 30s. And so we would talk, and then they would go home, and their family is like, you know, such a primary source of support. And then we'd come back and have the same conversation over and over. It was, you know, it was such a question as to why, are you interested in Medicaid? Like, how is it that we're going to kind of work through this? And we weren't able to ultimately. I don't know what they're doing, but they stopped working with me.
Have them call in.
Yeah.
All right. So in part two, we're going to talk more about therapy and family therapy. A Psychodelicious conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health, or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is a psychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.